The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
All right, everybody, here we go again. I can't wait. Wednesday morning, the 4th of August, 2021. Good old 710 KNUS Denver's talk station, the absolute worst radio show in the history of Colorado. 85 will be the high today, 92 tomorrow. I don't know. To make it even better, we have become friends, and we first met when he would do, we'd have him in, not before he started coming in studio, and he would be a guest by phone. He's absolutely brilliant. He's an attorney. He's a scholar. I love him to death. Rob Nadelson is here. And he started after the ban was lifted. He returns to the studio. You're looking great, man. Good morning.
It's great to be with the great Peter Boyles.
No.
Denver's vaccination against boredom.
I can tell you something.
And by the way, if this is a bad radio show, you and I are going to plumb new depths today.
Make it even worse.
Yeah.
This is also... supposedly Barack Obama's birthday.
No, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyhow, I mean, it's, you know, I'm trying to write and I show it to people and go, no, that's not true. You can't. I said, well, I kind of cleaned it up. But I remember 10 years ago, we just got in these horrible fights about Barack Obama's life story is not straight. And I've been through these things before, weapons of mass destruction, the airport, you know, then Players and Sugar was a good one for me. And we've come to this, and there seems to be two railroad tracks that we're running on. And you were sitting on the other side of the wall, and you're listening to the last 20 minutes of the show on vaccinations, or you can't call them vaccinations. Well, you know, you call them whatever the hell you want to call them. What do you do with all of this before we even begin the real stuff? What are we watching?
Well, first off, I am not a physician, okay?
Neither am I.
Right.
But I play one on the radio, of course.
Yeah, my dad was a physician. My brother's a physician. I've got five first cousins who are physicians. But I'm the failure in the family.
He's a lawyer.
I became a lawyer and a law professor,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know the story of the first Jewish president? Did you ever hear this story?
No.
Okay. Well, the first Jewish president is about to take the oath of office. And as he's putting his hands on the Bible, his mother is sitting at the inauguration, and someone says, Mrs. Goldblatt, you must be really, really proud. You must be really proud. And she says, I certainly am. You see that young man over there, she says, pointing to the president? His brother is a doctor.
Yeah.
That's my family.
there's that cultural thing of achievement. And, you know, when you read the history of the Jews in Europe, it's almost like a force feed to become, they become the intelligentsia. They become the physicians, the writers.
Yeah.
I mean, the attorneys, because they were not allowed to do other things.
Right. There's a whole question, an important question that sociologists and people who study this sort of thing ask. Why is it that Ashkenazi Jews, not Sephardic Jews, make the distinction, Sephardic Jew is someone who
comes from
Spain, right, or North Africa,
right. Right.
That area. This is not true of Sephardic Jews, but Ashkenazi Jews, that is to say, those who come from Central and Eastern Europe,
right,
have on average an IQ of about 10 points higher than the average person. And so the whole question becomes, you know, why is this true? How did this arise? Mm-hmm. And one reason is, of course, that Jews were forced into commerce,
sure.
Right? Or Judaism also requires a great deal of attention to sacred texts and analysis.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people who don't have that in them drop out of Judaism and go into the general general population. How? By the way, Peter, how did I get on this subject?
Because
So anyway, it became a point of pride among Jews to go into the professions. Absolutely. Hence my joke. And by the way, the greatest who was the greatest Jewish sage of historical times? I mean, post biblical. Do you know?
Wow.
Moses Maimonides. Moses Maimonides. He was Saladin's personal physician.
Yeah.
He was a physician.
He was
a doctor. Except
for Saladin.
Right.
Yeah,
he was a great biblical scholar, but to make money, he was a physician.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, hence the connection.
Because Saladin, because I read the history of the Crusade, and when Richard comes, Richard, by the way, never gets into Jerusalem.
No.
And Richard dies before he goes back to England in spite of Robin Hood. And
no, he actually did come back to England.
I thought he died
in
Austria.
He was in captivity. They ransomed him. He didn't last a long time. His entire reign was only 10 years. But
I thought
he didn't die before he came to England.
He takes his sister because he wants to marry his sister to Saladin's brother because he wants to do what they do in Europe, an interplay.
Right.
And so he gets ill.
Saladin was very much respected among the Christians. Very chivalrous.
Here's one.
Yeah.
Who was he ethnically? I've read Saladin's life.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Who was he ethnically, Saladin?
Who was he ethnically?
Yeah.
He was Egyptian, wasn't he?
He was a Kurd.
You're right. You're right. He was a Kurd.
He was
a Kurd. Exactly right.
And my people, the Kurds, but he was a Kurd. I thought when Richard got ill, Saladin's physician attended Richard.
Saladin sent his physician and medical assistance to Richard. That's right.
And then Richard never gets to Jerusalem, never gets inside.
He never gets in. Third Crusade failed, but he did come home to England.
Then they grab him in Austria and hold him for ransom, right?
Right. That's right.
Why did I think he died in Austria?
I don't know. But he did. They raised the ransom. He did get back. John was very unhappy. Yeah. Richard didn't last a whole long time in England. And then John became king with the very fatal consequences that we all know about.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm not going to discuss
that. No, better. But the thing that I love about, you know, when you say that, because that's this great history. And I just finished, 2 months ago, maybe, the Magellan, Life of Magellan.
Mm-hmm.
And all these historians believe he was a converso, and they also believe it of Columbus, that they converted from Judaism, and Magellan is believed to have been a converso, and as Columbus has been believed.
Yeah, there's some evidence that, I mean, I'm not one of those people who believes necessarily that somebody else wrote Shakespeare's plays, but there is some buzz that a converso, an Italian woman who hung around the royal court and would have known Shakespeare was a source for a lot of his Italian data. So, if you know,
Romeo and Juliet,
disproportionate, to Gentleman of Verona, Merchant of Venice, a disproportionate number of Shakespeare's plays occur in Italy, and there's a lot of specific information about Italy.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I'm sure I buy it right there, too. One other thing, and then we'll go to the real part. It's interesting, as a reader, a little bit of a traveler, the Palestinians now play the same role in the Middle East that the Jews played in Europe before the Shoah. They are the physicians. They're the intelligentsia.
Right.
I mean, it's really how history...
It's somewhat similar to the role that the Chinese play.
Bingo.
The Chinese diaspora in the Far East,
yes,
in places like Singapore, for example.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I love having you here because you're smart. Smarter than me. Rob Nadelson's here. Attorney at law, but also law professor and all.
I don't know who's smarter, but you're handsomer.
Oh, you're quick.
You got these great tattoos.
That's a product of an ill-spent youth. Can you play nine ball? Yeah. begin with Como. We were talking about Como off air.
Yeah. Well, you know, I spent the first 29 years of my life in New York State. You can probably hear it from the accent. And I was actually involved in public life. I had, at the age of 27, the second most important job in my town. It was an attorney job, but it was heavily political. And there was a lot of talk about running me for local office. And one of the reasons I came to Colorado was to get out, because the whole system, my town was not particularly corrupt, but the wider area was. And I feared for my own soul. I mean, not in a theological sense, but in a sense for my own integrity.
Sure, of course.
I just wanted to get out of that corrupt environment. and I came to Colorado, which, whatever you say about it, was relatively clean politically compared to New York. Please. Anyone who gets up to Albany very likely has been tarred by this. I mean, the problems with Cuomo go back a long, long, long time. And these are not new revelations. This is typical Cuomo stuff. It's been going on, but he's been useful for a long time to the Democratic left. But there's infighting going on right now, and so they use whatever tools they can. You read just a few weeks ago. Remember all the dirt that came out on Kamala Harris? She ran this horrible office. Yeah. People were afraid to work there.
Oh, absolutely.
She's a terrible human being. I wouldn't be surprised if that came from Cuomo stooges. And of course the media jumps on whichever on the side of whoever it looks like is winning at the time. So Cuomo served his purposes. They will now throw him to the hounds, and other people of the Democratic Party will benefit. And this, by the way, Peter, is our future. This is the future of America if we continue to go down the third world path that we're going down right now.
The one and only Rob Nadelson. Two things that shot me was when I watched it, and then watching the networks, and the Cuomo people have, I call it a propaganda video. They've come up with this video.
Yeah, I saw that.
Every time, I don't know if Fox did it this morning or not, but every time NBC, the other guys, would play the hit on Cuomo, then they would play the propaganda video as if. And I thought, how fast? Number two.
Well, I mean, I didn't react against that as strongly as you did, Peter, because...
Well, if it were Trump, would they play a pro-Trump video?
No.
My point.
My point is I wish they would provide both sides more often. I mean, I also saw CBS last night in which Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, just announced these, reestablishing a vaccination mandate. Yeah. And they interviewed nobody on the other side regarding it. Now, I'm pro-vaccine, vaccine.
I know.
But there are two sides to this story, and it's fair. Mm-hmm. So they interview one woman, and this one woman says, well, I don't really like it, but public health is more important than anything else. No, lady, public health isn't more important than anything else, right?
You're right.
So that's the usual spin of the media. So I don't mind if they play Cuomo's propaganda video.
I thought, would they do it for... Would they have done it for Donald Trump?
No, of course not. No, absolutely.
And
remember, Cuomo was their darling just a few years ago, right?
He was
the counter Trump.
Absolutely.
He was the good guy as opposed to Trump.
Here's how to handle the pandemic in Albany.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy's killing old people in nursing homes.
Right.
Let me come back to two other things. So I'm waiting. Somebody brought up De Niro. I brought up Barbara Streisand. Where's the cancel culture, the Me Too, the outside the Albany mansion right now? Where's the NFL on this? Where's
AWOL? AWOL.
All right, so tell me why. Robbie, why?
Well, because it's politics, right? Yeah. I mean, the left cares about one thing, power, imposing their wishes on other people. That's their secular religion, okay? And so if it's politically desirable to promulgate unsubstantiated charges against Brett Kavanaugh, that's fine.
Absolutely.
But if you've got substantiated charges, admittedly not cross-examined charges against Cuomo, well, we don't talk about that because he's done us some favors.
And right out of the box, I'm going, okay, now we're going to go to Albany. We're going to see people in the streets out there lighting bonfires and dumpsters.
No. You know, by the way, remember Elliot Spitzer?
Oh, absolutely.
There's another one. Yeah. Elliot Spitzer got busted. He was the governor of New York.
Oh, yeah.
He was another, pardon the expression, slime ball.
Yeah.
Was he
governor?
He was governor.
Okay.
He was attorney general.
AZ.
The definition of an attorney general is governor in waiting, right? Yeah. Or governor in hope.
Okay.
So this explains why Letitia James, the attorney general of New York, is so anti-Cuomo. She was the one who helped bust him on the nursing home thing. She's busting him on it. Right.
Yeah.
So she wants to be governor, or maybe she wants to help Kamala Harris against a possible primary challenge, whatever the reason.
That's very smart.
Yeah. Okay. So... I'm not sure where I
no,
where,
no, no, you were.
I came you're, from. You're, on,
but when Spitzer took the hit.
Right. Say that again.
When Elliot Spitzer.
Oh, yeah. Elliot Spitzer. He was the governor of New York. He had been attorney general. Mm-hmm. He was also a slime ball. And so he gets caught with a prostitute.
Absolutely.
Right? And so the story around Albany is Governor Spitzer is the only man in Albany who has to pay for sex.
Ooh, nice line. 13 after the hour. Rob Nadelson, Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. One of the stories around that is I got some friends that write. They write about organized crime in New York. And they're the guys that turned me on to Hickenlooper had gone to the Bilderberg. You know, they're, these guys are they're way ahead of
right,
me.
Right, right.
And the guy said, "Wait, remember we talked about that?" And I, because I think didn't he get caught in D.C. in a hotel room or something in D.C. with a really expensive hooker? Like, was that the, that one?
Spitzer?
Yeah,
was that? Yeah, $4,000 an hour.
So
$4,000 an hour because they charge that much in part well, because for the value of confidentiality.
Well, Tommy said,
cheap labbed.
I'm only using his name first time, but he said to me, he said, "Let me tell you something about that story." And these guys are born and bred. And he said, "Nothing like that happens." And he said, "There's a street tax on a I thought it was $1,000, whatever it was, a night hooker." He said, "The Gambinos would have had a street tax on it." I'm serious. He did. Now, this is straight from the shoulder. And he said, "You think that, how did that story get out?" Because they were going after these criminals. They were going after, when I was growing up, people would always push their nose to one side when they talked.
Yeah.
This guy. And he said, they got him.
Yeah.
He said, that's who got him. Was they gave him up because if she's working in a prostitution ring that's that expensive, they're paying what's called a street tax
right.
to keep operating.
Right.
And they said that's how he got caught, which may or may not be, but it was a great story.
You know, I'm actually sorry for New York State. I mean, it really was the Empire State at one time. Oh. Leading state in population.
California.
Leading state in industry.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, the leading state in the country in agriculture.
Okay. If
anyone within the sound of our voices has never visited upstate New York, you need to go there. Yeah. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful place. But starting with Nelson Rockefeller, state has been ruined. I mean,
what do you do with the Rockefellers? I mean, we're talking about... You know,
you keep him out of political office.
Well, but that's, you know, David Rockefeller is always into conspiracies.
Right.
Always turns up.
Right.
Not so much Nelson, but
my concern was with Nelson Rockefeller and had nothing to do with conspiracy. He spent the state in a bankruptcy. And it actually was a Democratic governor who, Hugh Carey, who was able to avoid bankruptcy for New York.
What do you do with all those guys? I mean, they really are the lucky sperm club.
But, well, you know, it's not what you and I would do. It's what the voters of New York do. Oh. I mean, eventually, I think they're going to have to wise up.
Was Mario Cuomo mobbed up?
I have no idea.
Well,
all I know that this is a guy who was being touted for president.
Oh,
one of the best public speakers the Democrats had. Okay. And then suddenly, boom, he drops out. Now, when a politician tells you, speaking to you now as a former politician, I want to spend more time with my family.
So I know.
You're
caught.
That 99% of the time, that's nonsense, right?
Yeah.
And there's some reason, there was some dirty linen, there likely somewhere.
The rap always was that they were mobbed up, and it's kind of what...
Well, maybe, right. But, you know, there's also the stereotype because his last name ended in a vowel.
Nah.
So I don't know. All I can tell you is I strongly suspect that there was some dirty linen somewhere, and that's why he didn't run.
That's generally why they all bail out. They do. I mean, you know, they're caught.
No, occasionally some do reach the decision enough is enough.
For instance?
Well, myself, for example.
I know, but you're one
of them. I was seriously considering another run for governor of Montana, and I had support. A lot of people had said I had run before my time and was being vindicated. And ultimately... we polled the family, and the family was very lukewarm on it, so we didn't do it.
We pause time at 17 after the hour. One and only, Rob Nadelson's in studio. What I want to do is do a turnaround, come back. We're going to open the phones up and talk about, and you and I talk about this all the time, nobody, including me, trusts the government. I just wrote a column about the sadness of American foreign policy since I was a little boy, and it goes on. The beat goes on. I don't trust them, but how does that come down to now we're talking about you can't use the V word, vaccine, but I'm serious about it. I mean, like, one of the things that pops up, and we always read about the syphilis experiments that were done on African Americans.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, Joe Lewis's father was a syphilis experiment. And, you know, and so people, no, I don't trust you. So we'll come back. Nadelson's here. It is going to be 85 for high. We're back here tomorrow. The Worst Radio Show comes on back in 5 in the morning. You could be saving money if you're going on a vacation, like going to Sturgis. Our friend David Ellison, Cherry Creek. Pays top dollar for diamonds, gold, sterling silver, wedding bands, Rolex watches, instant cash on the spot. David's been buying precious metals and antiques for decades. David's my guy. Confidential evaluations. I want you to come and read some of these while we're taking a break. No obligation, free appraisals, private and confidential. If you're going on the road, you need some dough, looking to buy a gift for somebody special, see David. Best prices on diamonds and jewelry. Beautiful, newly remodeled, expanded showroom, the Black Awnings, located 3rd and Clayton at Cherry Creek. DavidEllisJewelry.com, DavidEllisJewelry.com, 6 days a week. Park and go and see the man. Call him at 303-322-8779, 303-322-8779. He's gone. We lost Dusty Hill. Wednesday morning, August the 4th, I got a text on his funeral is coming. As they've replaced him. They're playing Sturgis, a little band from Texas. 85 will be the high today. ZZ Top. Stack Optical, first of all, they're open and masks are optional if you've been vaccinated. Ooh, here comes the email. You don't need to have an appointment unless your eye exam is needed. My good friend is Alan Stack, Stack Optical. I'm leaving for Sturgis and taking three pairs of eyewear, and all three of them come from Alan. I got the highway wraps, I got the darks, I got the ones that go dark to light, and I got the everydays, and I got prescription ski goggles that come from Alan. Name it, Stack Optical has it. 2233 South Monaco Parkway, South Monaco and Evans. Give them a call today and ask for the $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578, 303-321-1578, online stackoptical.com. Stackoptical.com, 6 days a week. Alan Stack is like the good guy. He was an NSCD kid and originally one of the original kids. Vision Health, I recommend Stack. He's my guy. Visit them today and tell them Peter Boyle sent you in studio. The one and only, he's a law scholar, he's a professor, erstwhile politician. I'm so glad he never got into office because he would have ruined the whole thing. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Nadelson. Trust in government. We were talking about it off air. I mean, I don't trust these people.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. And I remember, you mentioned my political career. Part of it was a series of debates I did with the governor. The governor was Mark Roscoe. This is in Montana. And he was very, very liberal Republican. And when I say very liberal Republican, I don't mean very liberal for a Republican. I mean very, very liberal, period. He came out for state-run health care. He came out for massive tax increases. He opposed school choice and so forth. And he used to annoy me, and he said, you know, prod me in these debates. You're too distrustful of government. You got to trust more. Well, of course, the answer is no, you don't trust. You don't trust. Now, I'm going somewhere with this, Peter. The founders themselves made the point that a healthy distrust is always a good thing for citizens to have toward government.
Why you're supposed to have guns.
All of that having been said, you also have to exercise a little discretion. Even liars sometimes tell the truth, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
A liar says, I love my daughter. The liar probably is telling the truth, right? And so a wise citizen has to figure out, you know, what are the chances that the government is lying about the vaccine? What are the chances they're telling the truth about the vaccine? And what's the benefit one way or another? What really is the downside? If you're in your 70s, what really is the downside of taking the vaccine? Well, it's practically really no downside. It's not like you're going to worry about symptoms showing up 40 years later, right? And yet it's put out by a reputable private company. It's probably going to work, so you take it. On the other hand, for kids, that's a different story. In the case of kids, there could potentially be bad side effects decades in the future, and kids generally are not a serious risk for COVID anyway. So my point is always distrust the government, but use your brain too. Simply because the government says something doesn't mean it's always false.
But that's the point what we've now hit.
Yes, we have. We have. We see the same thing with the judicial system, right?
Please.
When I talk about Article 5, the amendment process, I say, look, the courts have decided this. These are their longstanding rules. And the response always comes up, the courts are totally political. They'll do anything they want.
I hear that every day.
Well, of course. It's partly true, but it's not entirely true. And there's certain areas of the Constitution, for example, where it's not true. And again, you got to use your brain and distinguish.
I told you I'm rereading Watergate. We were talking about it. And a comment at the time said, when Nixon resigned, you could hear Thomas Jefferson laugh. Isn't that a great line? You could hear Jefferson laugh.
That's a great line, but I don't understand it.
That the Constitution worked.
The whole method, the
mechanisms.
Okay. Well, I don't think of Jefferson too much into the
Constitution. He didn't write it.
Jefferson was, in fact, in France where the constitutional debates occurred.
Because everybody knew who Jefferson was. If somebody said, we heard John Adams laugh, or they went,
Adams was also in Europe, so I can't use him. But James Madison, you can use James Madison.
But who would know?
James Madison laughed.
I think people. But yeah. Anyway, it was a great line.
Well.
Quit this. Wasn't my line. That was some another.
As a constitutional scholar, this is actually something that frosts me a little bit, and that will give you an assessment of me to understand what frosts me. And that is when people hold up as examples of what the Constitution means, Alexander Hamilton on the one side or Thomas Jefferson on the other side. Well, they were both what we would call extremists in their day. They were far, far out of the mainstream. Hamilton didn't like the Constitution, wanted to rewrite it. Jefferson wasn't around when it was written or when it was debated. These are not good sources. So I get really annoyed when people start quoting either Hamilton or Jefferson as authorities on the
Fair
Constitution.
Enough.
There are lots of other better people, Dickinson, Madison, and others.
Problem is that people like you get it, and I think the guy said it because it was going to
yeah.
be.
Well, I just had to say this.
Oh, fair enough.
For whatever Constitution okay. walks, there might be in the audience all 2.5 of you.
But it nevertheless, it worked.
What, the Constitution?
Yes.
Well, yeah, it worked. And a large reason it did work is because the extremists of the left or the right, the Hamiltons and the Jeffersons, did not have significant input into it.
Oh, yeah.
It worked because the moderates, the wiser heads prevailed, the Connecticut delegation, people like mm-hmm. Roger Sherman or people like James Madison from Virginia or people like one of the most underestimated founders, Edmund Randolph, also of Virginia. These moderates basically pulled the deal together.
When Nixon resigns, is that an example of the Constitution working?
Yeah, I think so, because while he didn't resign as a result of the impeachment process, resigned under the threat of the impeachment process.
Right. Yeah,
So I would say yeah.
Okay.
I would say. But on the other hand, when Lyndon Johnson did horrible things, he got to serve out his term. So there, I don't think the Constitution worked.
But Johnson quits.
Well, he quit. He quit in that he didn't run for re-election
right.
in 1968,
right.
but he served out his term and he passed a lot of legislation that I believe to be unconstitutional and also very, very, very harmful. I mean, the Great Society destroyed the black family, for example.
The Great Society did all kinds of damage.
Yeah, it did. It did. So in that case, the Constitution didn't work. And one reason it didn't work is because the U.S. Supreme Court had abdicated its responsibility to curb Congress when Congress exceeded the Constitution.
The smartest guy, Rob Nadelson, where did you lose your faith and trust? What event and how old were you when you went, no, this game's over?
When I lost my faith and trust in government?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever had a lot of faith and trust in government.
No, but there may
I mean, I'm not a naturally suspicious person, but I recognize that people sometimes tell the truth, sometimes don't, and they're subject to their own interests.
Was it gradual or was there an event?
I don't think there was an event, Peter.
Okay, but it's just
yeah.
gradual.
I will tell you what destroyed my faith in the media was very early on. I was only 15, 16 years old, what they did to Barry Goldwater. I mean,
wow.
flat lie after yeah. lie after lie after lie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was the playbook for what they did to Trump.
Because,
with less justification.
Yeah.
And with much less justification.
When the end for Nixon comes, one of the advocates that tells him to leave is Barry Goldwater.
That's right.
Yeah. Barry yeah. Goldwater, you, Scott.
Right. You know, Hugh Scott, senator from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they all go into that.
Barry Goldwater played a really important role in the Republican Party. He was a very very respected senator. He was well within the mainstream.
Man.
And the media turned him into some kind of
monster.
Monster, yeah. A guy who was going to yeah. blow up Vietnam with atomic bombs.
I did an interview with him years ago by phone.
With Goldwater?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had the great line. He said, he was talking about the press, and he said, they said that if I won, young Americans would be fighting in Vietnam.
Right.
And he said, there'd be rioting in the streets. He goes, I lost.
And they're doing, I must have won. They're doing all those things
yeah, he
now.
Said, he said,
talking
he
about the 60s. Yeah.
He got a three-beat do. He said, I lost.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant guy.
He's a very interesting study.
Did you ever know him or in your?
I never met him. I've got an autograph. Personalized autograph in my office at the Independence Institute. A friend of mine got that for me, who worked in the Goldwater campaign, got that for me many years ago. And when I was at the University of Montana, I prominently displayed the Goldwater autograph, I think mostly to annoy my liberal colleagues.
He's one of the reasons for Ronald Reagan.
He is a principal reason for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
he paved the way for Ronald Reagan.
Let me flip this about. I never get enough time with you. Trust in government. Let me come back to it, because a lot of this anti-vax stuff is just flat out, I don't trust the government.
Right. I think that's true. But again, as I said, you've got to use your brain and realize when maybe they're telling the truth. Sometimes they are.
Well, I bring this up, and it's been, I said, the government, going back to child labor laws or going back to smallpox,
yeah.
or going back, we talked about these things, polio inoculation, cigarettes are wrong. you know, that kind of
okay.
stuff.
Okay, I heard that in the earlier part of the show, and you're making these point about good things government did. One thing to keep in mind, Peter, is a lot of those things would have happened anyway, right? One of the reasons child labor disappeared was because it became economically feasible to do without it.
Not when Woodrow Wilson put kids back into factories.
And in fact, most states had abolished child labor long before the federal government abolished child labor, although admittedly that's a government action. I'll give you another example. The Clean Air Act. If you look at the graph of air pollution before and after the Clean Air Act, you will find a steady cleaning up of air pollution both before and after, with virtually no change in the curve as a result of the Clean Air Act. The point is that many of the things that government takes credit for would have happened anyway. Having made that point, I will nevertheless concede to you that simply because the government does it, it's not wrong. And I agree with child labor laws. You know, children can't protect themselves. They don't have adults' volition.
Well, and it really, if what I read is true, it spins out of animal cruelty that that the people who watched, you couldn't beat a horse to death in the street, but you could hit a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was that kind of a thing. But also in Europe, Marx writes about it, the drunk kids in the shops outside the factories.
Yeah, you mentioned the bobbin factories.
Yeah, right. The 12 and 13-year-old, 11-year-olds.
Yeah, drunk. Kids are defenseless. And I think that's definitely a proper role of government, is to defend the defenseless.
And again, civil rights was a role of the government, the federal government, and Eisenhower.
Well, especially because the government had been largely responsible for the segregation.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, look, you know, if the government had not been propping up racism and segregation, probably the market would have dealt with it.
I'm not sure.
The profit motive is very strong, right? And if you can hire a black person who's going to make you a bigger profit, you might not do it the first time or the second time, and after a while you're going to say, oh, what the heck, let's hire him anyway. I think the market would have solved the civil rights problem, but it was not allowed to. Jim Crow.
I'm stumped at that one because even the unions, when I'm a kid and I'm in the union, they wouldn't let black guys.
Well, yeah, money. Right. But the government also propped up the unions. The Wagner Act, remember?
But it was FDR that says green light. We're going to.
I'm a former union organizer. I like unions. Yeah. But the fact is that unions became inordinately strong, largely because of the Wagner Act. The government propped them up. And that's one of the reasons why labor could discriminate against blacks the way they did. Because one thing is they had to close shop, right? So they could say to an employer, you can't hire anybody who isn't a member of the union, and then they would keep blacks out of the unions.
Well, sure. I mean, but that was Lyndon Johnson, who I struggle with, and I by and large don't think I think he's an awful president, but they did what was called the Philadelphia Plan, and they went in and they said, no, I'm to the unions. When the government steps into the unions, said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's mixed, but I'm a union guy.
Well, I mean, we're basically on the same page here, and that is that not everything the government does is wrong, and there's a role and there's a role for government in protecting the vulnerable.
Right, now we're back to the vax. So what do you do? I mean, there are people that I respect that expect in a time period there's going to be a knock on the door, and you're going to have your vax.
Well, that is scary, right?
Of course it is. So what? I mean, you know, the government, what was the great line? Was it Reagan that said that line? I'm from the government, I'm here to help you.
You're right.
Remember that line?
The biggest lie in America.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like, I mean, that was it. So where are we headed?
Well, you know, I think if you look at the Cuomo story, it tells you where we're headed. The government has become so large and so intrusive and so determinative in our life that our life is defined by these political knife fights, right?
Oh.
I mean, they become all-consuming. There wasn't a time that long ago where there was a huge portion of your life, majority of your life, that was not impacted by government at all, right? Yeah. So let's go, say, before the Great Depression. The only time most people ever dealt with the government was either at a time of war or when they went to the post office. Otherwise, the federal government had no role in their life. And so the political garbage that went on among federal politicians was something that just didn't affect people. I mean, it just wasn't important to anybody unless you happen to work in the military or for the post office. That was about it. Now it's becoming all-consuming because we are not admitting any limitations to government's power over our life. And the COVID situation has made things a lot worse.
Well, my question, what was the great line? Protect the shores, deliver the mail, leave me alone.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I'm serious.
That's right.
I mean, we're talking about Jennings Bryant and you know, the populists and all those guys. Leave us alone.
And if there are police functions to exercise, let them be taken care of at the state and local level. You know, when I was I mentioned that I was involved in public life earlier in life in New York State. Our town there means basically a small city. Our town has historical records, and if you went into the historical records, you would see the poverty list. You would see the list of all the people who were receiving public assistance, how much, when it was stopped, when it began. It was all handled on the local level. Now, when I went to college, I learned that, if the federal government hadn't stepped in the Great Depression, people would have starved in the streets. It wasn't true.
Mm.
It wasn't true. It was,
people that went,
you know,
through
the
it.
Local, you had a social safety net already. You know, and so we didn't need a large federal government.
Man, I'm not sure. I mean, when
we also had a large private network. You know,
Al Capone fed people.
No, not those people.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, they were called benefit societies.
You know, I mean, that looks good on paper, but I was raised by Depression era blue collar Irish.
Right.
And you know, my mom, who I love my mother, and my mother talked about they stole milk. It's easy now looking back from 2021, but
look, my parents were Depression babies too, right? But you also have to ask what caused the depression? What I agree. What turned the stock market crash into a depression?
Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy.
But we can have that discussion. But I mean, I tell people, look, this country was ready to go. There were forces in this country that would have done what happened in Europe had we not been careful. And, you know, the rise of the fascists, the rise of the Nazis, the Bolsheviks, that's all part of this. And it's so easy to
Have you read Shea's book, The Forgotten Man?
Yeah, and that's the one book that everybody hangs it on. But there's so many other great books that say, look, it was screwed.
Well, yeah, but there are also economists like Milton Friedman, for example, took the position that if the government had simply, allowed a small inflation of the currency at 2% a year, otherwise stayed out. I put my constitutional historian hat on. One of the really awful things that the Roosevelt administration did is that they made conditions so uncertain, people put their money under their beds. They didn't want to invest.
And he's also saved the banks.
He
shut down the Holland. Yeah. Did the bank? No, come on. I'm pretty good about some of this. The banks, there were runs on the banks. Banks
were
going to fold.
There were runs on the banks.
And so what does FDR do? There's a bank holiday. And so they can get the money to the banks and make people. You can see it. But it's best in, what's that Jimmy Stewart movie they always play at the holidays, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, that was happening, yeah. And banks were folding. My grandma.
Let me make my point here. That the Roosevelt administration so unsettled. Yeah. Investment decisions with constant changes of policy, with constant experimentation, it may very well have extended the Great Depression. I'm not saying everything Roosevelt did was bad. I'm saying let's not be too quick to give the Roosevelt administration or government credit in the Depression. They may have caused or aggregated and prolonged the Depression.
They made huge mistakes. On the other hand, they were operating on what they were looking at Europe. I mean, FDR is an Anglophile. They're looking at Europe. They're watching the Bolsheviks. They're watching the rise of the Nazis, the fascists in Spain, the fascists in Italy, the invasions of Ethiopia.
Well,
they're looking at the world.
What you're telling me is their motivation.
Oh,
and I think that's right. I think the motivation was fine. They wanted to prevent that. But I'm talking about the practical effects of the policies.
You know, it's easy to look back and throw rocks, but, you know, I defend that because he allowed for the unions to organize. He allowed these things to happen.
Unions could organize.
Pardon me?
The unions could organize.
And when they were taking over the factories and the strikes that took place, Herbert Hoover was not their friend.
No.
And there's a reason.
Right. And one reason was the violence and the intimidation. So, right.
What, of Henry Ford's goons? I mean, come on. I got
no, I mean of both sides.
I mean, look, Henry Ford's goons, there's a reason why American presidents ride in Cadillacs. Because of Henry Ford. I'm not making it up. FDR chose Cadillacs over Lincolns because of what Henry Ford was doing with his goons. And
I'm not going to defend Henry Ford.
I'm not asking you to.
Right. But who was an anti-Semite?
He also was really anti. Right? Also stopped right. the unions.
What I'm saying is that whatever the motivations were, the Roosevelt administration, right? Yeah. I think that the solutions were often bad.
Well, that could be. However, at the time, they were watching the world, and they were watching. He saved banks.
You're just repeating my point about motivations. You're saying the motivation was right.
They saved capitalism. They saved.
Well,
capitalism.
I disagree with that.
All right, we need a break. 85 will be the high today. My true, the best. Sitting in studio, Rob Nadelson. If you're concerned about homelessness, and there's another example. Let's keep the drive alive. Step Denver has been helping men since 1983 to overcome the consequences of addiction, rebuild their lives through sobriety, work, accountability, and community. Step Denver doesn't take government funding, and it started with Bob, and it continues. They count on people like you. In the last 18 months, 710 KNUS listeners have donated 265 vehicles. The sales of those vehicles give 265 men the opportunity to enter STEP programs, an $8.4 million impact. I mean, this works. If you want an answer, Cote News, sobriety was number one. A car, truck, a motorcycle, an RV, contact Step Denver today. They transform lives. Your donation is tax deductible. A free tow, hassle-free experience, 303-296-9020, 303-296-9020. Visit stepdenver.org, stepdenver.org, stepdenver.org. Call Vincent, 303-296-9020 today. We're going to run out of time with Rob Nadelson off the air and on the air. He's the most brilliant guy. We come in. Let's go out on Reagan because we were talked about the banks and FDR and all the rest of that stuff, and we can beat each other. But, you know, I grew up with these people who – and they also ended up loving Ronald Reagan. They love – I said, in my lifetime, the two great American presidents, FDR and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I would agree with that, even though I disagree with a lot of FDR's policies. One thing about Reagan is that, you know, the rap on him was he wasn't too bright, which, of course, is absurd. You made the point earlier on in the air that he said the same thing over and over again, but in different ways. That's actually a measure of cleverness. Yep. And let me explain why. One of the rules of politics is that if you're running for office or you're trying to get a political agenda adopted, you throw out all the other points and you focus on two or three. And you don't stray
because of music.
That.
What were his?
And his points were about communism.
Yep.
Were about the best is less yet to come, and about government is the problem.
And the shining city.
Yeah, and he would say those things over and over in different ways, not because he didn't realize there weren't other problems, but because he, unlike many other less successful politicians, knew how to stay on message.
And he was an FDR fan.
He was an FDR fan, but not everybody's perfect.
No, that was one of the things.
I'm an FDR fan to a limited extent.
He was a
but,
fan.
But I was going to talk about some of the bad things he did. We don't have time to talk about that. But it's analogous to the moratoria that are now going on in the payment of rent.
No, I agree.
Simple redistribution of money in a destructive way and an economically stupid way.
Two greatest wartime leaders in our country's history, Abraham Lincoln and FDR.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That I agree with you. Yeah, that is FDR's greatest contribution.
Absolutely.
His wartime leadership.
He's a wartime leader.
That's right.
He and Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah.
And those two guys are, like I said, it's easy to sit and pot shot, but, you know, there's a FDR saved the banks, and then when he saved the banks, I don't know. I love you. When you're coming back, there was no one better than Rob Nadelson, brilliant scholar, great friend. Bada bing, bada boom. That's it.
And an honor to be with you.
I love you coming on the show. Tomorrow, the most hated show again goes at 5 a.m. Thank you, Billy Thorpe. Take care of yourselves, everybody. We'll do it again.